It's just
this is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the argument in part. No, we fought an entire goddamn war. States' right to do what?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not
You're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On today's show, I'll have an expose on the recent occupation of Wall Street and how the police brutality and attempts to protect the corrupt has gotten people to recognize in the nation the nonviolent movement that has been fighting back the corporate state. Then I'll sit down and talk with Peoria Area Voices for Animals and how they fight every day for animal rights and how the Civic Center's recent Ringling Brothers Circus Act is another example of animal abuse. Then we'll hear from local musicians at Art Show, and I'll sit down and talk with Chris Keller, who's being a featured artist at Art Show this past September. And on today's show, there will be live performances from Hannah Offit and Cole Hollow. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal and prepare to be radicalized. WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. If you've been listening and watching lately, you'll notice that in New York City at Wall Street, protesters have occupied Liberty Plaza and have demonstrated and put up a nonviolent resistance against the police. The occupation was first posted earlier this summer by Adbusters, who now has not done much else with the actual occupation. But what many people may not know is that the first occupation started on September 1st, which was a test run taken by a few individuals. This was done to see how the police would respond. In a video that was posted later, one of the protesters during the test run of the occupation started talking with a cop who was there to arrest them.
Loans. We don't have to take exuberant loans in order to get education. I want to be able to...
I agree with you.
No.
I don't know what you want me to say.
No, it's the thing. Like, say we do the September 17th action, right? I know we're not gonna reach these guys.
But we're trying to get the people
in New York City. We're trying to get the teachers' unions. We're trying to get the average people who are walking around.
The second American Revolution! True emancipation can never happen through the present dominant institutions because they are the very ones that generate or replicate the hierarchies of injustice. We have, yes, a one-line emancipation cry. Wall Street is all streets!
Another one of the activists spoke to the cops before his arrest about local and federal laws that gave them the right to be there, but the police just ignored him.
We're going to leave. Obviously, we're not here to cause problems.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure, you know, we do have the right to sleep on a public sidewalk. And it's a law that passed. It was a court order in 2000.
Can we just have a moment?
And we're, yeah.
So I just want to point that out. That,
all right, just go and leave them.
Legal to camp on a public sidewalk as long as you build on structures, as long as you do not need a permit. That is a protection guaranteed by the federal constitution of the United States based on a decision by the district court. Why don't you get the paperwork? I know what the paperwork is. Because you need to tell me how I'm actually in violation of the law. This is not in violation of the law. I know what the law is. I know what the law is. The local law, this is a federal law. It transcends. That's a federal law goes above that.
Okay, so you need a permit for that.
I can speak as a human being with the product of my own voice.
By yourself, you can.
That is the First Amendment. That is guaranteed by the First Amendment. If you don't think that that is protected by a constitution of the United States, then I think we're living in different countries.
No. You can't.
From this action alone, 9 people were arrested for disorderly conduct. As it's been cited in a 2000 district court decision in New York, which stated the situation for those who were going to occupy Wall Street, quote, the United States Constitution does not allow the city to prevent an orderly political protest from using public sleeping as a means of symbolic expression. But, as stated by a U.S. Day of Rage's cheat tactic sheet, camping is prohibited, meaning no tents. Something that Adbusters did not think about when calling for the occupation. Then, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security issued a bulletin warning that the planned activities from the group Anonymous would be partaking in the occupation. This started the right wing to paint this as, quote, Wall Street targeted for Britain-style riots. Furthermore, false links to Acorn, SEIU, and even President Obama were thrown out there for good measure. But the real planning of what was going to happen was at the New York City General Assembly, which was talking about how to keep the occupation moving and in organizing it. Nathan Schneider, with Waging Nonviolence, spoke to those who were involved in the process of the General Assembly.
The first General Assembly was in Wall Street, and it was at the Raging Bull. Since then, we've been meeting. We met at the Potato Famine Memorial, and after that, we've been meeting every weekend at Tompkins Square Park on Saturday in preparation for this action, September 17th, but also beyond that. And one of the things that came up was what a General Assembly is. And for us, it was very important to kind of recognize that we're part of a movement that's global, that we've seen resemblances of something, or we saw inspiration in Tunisia, and particularly in Egypt in Tahrir Square, and then more in Western countries like Greece and Spain. And we thought that there was something like that possible here. And they all used the form of General Assembly, which relies on consensus. And it's an open, participatory process that's not hierarchical, it's horizontal, and it allows for people to get involved, constitute themselves, bring in their own ideas to a process.
The common question that keeps coming up, especially for the General Assembly, is what is the protesters' demands? If you look towards the U.S. Day of Rage, it has posted, quote, one citizen, $1, one vote. Although some, like U.S. Day of Rage IT strategist, Alexa O'Brien, doesn't want to label herself with any ideology. As reported, others have called for restoring the Glass-Steagall Act, or placing higher taxes on the rich, or ending the endless wars abroad. But aside from those goals, ultimately, the protesters have disrupted daily life, or business as usual, on Wall Street, and are getting the people's attention nationwide with people power. To do this, protesters have marched from Bowling Green, near the southern tip of Manhattan, toward the backup meeting point called Zuccotti Park, or what has been newly named Liberty Plaza, several blocks north of Wall Street on Broadway. Or they conduct marches in the morning around the financial district chanting, Occupy Wall Street all day, all week, or We Are the 99%. There were candlelight vigils, a media center to get the message out, signs being made, people sleeping on the concrete, while barricades surrounded the blocks around the stock exchange. When the protesters had officially occupied Wall Street, the police started to take positions and guide or pin in the protesters into areas where they could easily control them as they marched up towards the stock exchange on Wall Street, here reported on Democracy Now.
The police presence has been strong, though mainly out of sight. During the night, the last couple of nights, there have been maybe 20, 25 police visible from the park where they've been sleeping. But there are police all around, and it's clear that if necessary, they could mobilize a large number at any time.
The police quickly grew in numbers, but so did the protesters. Media attention started to grow a bit more, but still was barely anything, and when they did report, it was badly done. When it began to rain later into the occupation, protesters started to set up tarps and unassembled tents to cover the media equipment that they were using to connect to others. The police then started telling people to take them down. Some cooperated, others didn't. A teacher named Justin Weeds took up a megaphone and began to speak. In a video, Justin is seen speaking while an officer moves in on him from his left.
But more importantly,
we derive strength
from each other.
The cop tells him to stop. Justin refuses by continuing to speak in the mic, but only briefly before the cop pulls him to the ground and arrests him. Justin expected that would happen to him for defying an officer, like most of the people down at Liberty Plaza. Then soon after Justin's arrest and being taken away by the police returned and started pushing more protesters around. Seven protesters would be arrested on Tuesday, September 20th, but the number of the protesters grew. By September 23rd, the General Assembly was monitoring police radios, handing out tarps and ponchos. Protesters ate, talked, made flyers, and continued to organize. On Thursday evening, there was a march from hundreds of people mourning over the execution of Troy Davis in Georgia as they made their way up towards Liberty Plaza. Stop the march with barricades and their clubs while arresting others, but failed to bring it to a halt. The numbers of protesters grew even more from this. The police used makeshift barriers, basically orange nets, and herded people in. At one point, the police isolated a group of women and began to mace them. Another woman was dragged by her hair to be arrested. Others were slammed down to the concrete pavement. This is one of the key components to nonviolence, is when you show your adversary as what he is. And when they use violence, and you do not, and the public sympathizes with you more, which helps the movement. But also, the other thing that failed miserably was the mainstream media, like it has been for the past decade. Not only were they getting the wording wrong, but how long the occupation had been going on. The Associated Press and Reuters thought that the occupation was only going on for one day. The New York Times, after sending a reporter down to the plaza to cover the occupation, didn't even know that there was a huge general assembly. Although, another reporter from the Times has done a better job of reporting, it only represents a small part of the story on the occupation. And even ABC Channel 7 News in New York City ran a headline,
"By the end of
Occupy
Saturday,
Wall
80
Street
people had been arrested.
Gets violent overnight."
It still remains what
when
will
the
happen.
People getting
but
violent
the protesters
the
at Wall Street have inspired others to do their own occupations, like in Chicago and Los Angeles. But those of us who are fighting back are now seeing the state shedding one of its masks and showing its more violent part. The corporate state is now seeing those lives they have ruined from the financial meltdown, and how no one has been punished for it.
but instead has kept it unregulated and corrupt. The people who occupy Wall Street represent all of us, those who are angered and do not have a voice in this country, in fear of being ridiculed or stepped upon. We need to let the culture of fear within us die. It is what holds us back from rebelling. We cannot dismiss this any longer. Something needs to be done to stop those in power before we slide further into the dead. Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. For many, it's easy to speak out against human rights violations in the world. When it comes to animal rights, our attitudes seem to change. PAVA, Peoria Area Voices for Animals, is a local, informal group for everyone interested in animal rights or veganism in the Peoria area. PAVA does a lot of peaceful activism in the local area and try to educate people on the suffering of animals. I wanted to learn more on what PAVA does and decided to sit down with Monica Ball and Tanya Sneed.
PAVA is actually more an animal rights group, but we focus on, and we do a lot of issues related to animals, but we focus on promoting a vegan diet because the majority of animals that are killed, 90% of animals that are killed for food. And out of those 90% that are killed for food, 90% of those are chickens. So a chicken happens to be our logo for PAVA. But yeah, our focus is on vegan education because it's the greatest number of suffering happens when people choose to eat animals for food. So the main things that we do, we have a monthly vegan potluck where people are welcome to come and experience and taste all the delicious vegan food. So we can kind of wipe out that myth that vegan food is bland and boring because it's anything but. We also, and that's monthly, we do our vegan potlucks. We also we have usually a monthly protest or some kind of demonstration to either encourage people to adopt a vegan diet, encourage them to explore that, or to protest some type of animal abuser that's in town, the circus, the rodeo, that type of thing. We also do leafleting every now and then, trying to get information out into, especially we like to do that at colleges, get out information to people so they can, you know, be educated and make better choices. We also have on Mondays from 9 to 10 p.m. on Cable Public Access Channel 22, we show different undercover video and different animal rights programming. So it's all really focused on education. Mm-hmm. Primarily is what we're trying to do because most people don't know the truth about animal agriculture and most people haven't really thought about why they eat what they eat, why they buy what they buy, and there's just a lot of inherent misery and suffering in that. And so our role is mostly to educate people, to try to get them to think, to be awake in the world and think about what they're doing, what their consumer purchases are funding.
Where did your understanding of veganism kind of start?
For me, there was actually, I had a college class on that explored a lot of social justice issues. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard about vegetarianism. I grew up on a beef farm. All my immediate family are farmers, or as I like to call them, harmers. Because real farmers, you know, they're producing plant-based food. They're not harming and killing animals. But anyway, so I come from this family of harmers, and and so of course I wasn't taught, you know, that vegetarianism wasn't a word that was used in the rural neighborhood I grew up in. And so it was this college professor that, along with, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia, lots of issues, and it was, she brought up mostly environmental injustice, and that was her reason for being vegetarian, because it is, consuming animals is just a grossly inefficient use of resources in terms of how much water and land and the grains that are used to create animal flesh, as opposed to how much more productive the same space and resources could be if we're just eating plants directly. So really, I first came at this from an environmental perspective, and unfortunately, I only heard the word vegetarian, so that's as far as I got. I was still eating cheese and dairy and contributing to untold amounts of suffering in those industries unknowingly. So I was vegetarian for probably 13 years, and I can't remember exactly when I heard, you know, learned about veganism, but I do remember at some point reading a book where it was talking about that, you know, milk is for calves. Cow's milk is for baby calves. And it somehow just eventually clicked that, hey, I'm not a calf. And so obviously I shouldn't be consuming that product. And that's when I became vegan. And I'd always had a suspicion in the back of my mind that obviously slaughtering animals outright to eat them, you know, is cruel and ridiculous. And I don't want to fund that. But I always had the suspicion that probably what goes on in egg and dairy production, if I, you know, really were to look into it, maybe it's not going to be so great either. And I think part of me didn't want to know. And once I did look into it, of course, it's worse than anyone's nightmare, worse than I could have ever imagined, with the baby chicks, you know, males being discarded alive, ground up alive, 250 million every year. And then the treatment of the egg-laying hens, which are probably some of the most abused animals on the planet. Mutilated, confined, and slaughtered, and yeah, it's pretty gruesome. And of course, dairy. As a mother who's nursed my own children, dairy really probably hits my heart the strongest in terms of stealing a woman's child from her, raping her to impregnate her, stealing her child, and then stealing the milk she made for that child. So anyway, after learning that, of course, those are horrific industries, and I certainly didn't want to fund those. And but it was, yeah, it was just getting that realization that I'm not a calf. You know, we're all meant to be weaned when we're young. We're never meant to drink the species of, or the milk of another species. And so that's where I started. I came at it from an environmental perspective. And as I learned more, you know, now it's for the animals. The health and environmental benefits, those are great, but I'm vegan for the animals.
I asked Tanya Sneed, one of the members of PAVA and a longtime vegan, why she took up the fight for animal rights.
The reason I went vegan, or how I first came upon it, I was supporting an innocent person. Well, actually, I still do support an innocent person on death row named Jimmy Dennis. And a fellow supporter of his had a web page in which he had a link to Jimmy's site. And then he also had a link to Farm Sanctuary. And I'd never heard of a Farm Sanctuary. Wasn't even sure what that meant. But when I looked at the website, I, of course, figured out that they were rescuing farmed animals. And so I just questioned Jeff about it, you know, what's this about? And then he was telling me that he's vegan, and he was writing this in an email, so I was like, how do you pronounce that? I'd never heard of it. I was 35 years old, and all of this was brand new to me. And so, you know, once I found out that vegan meant that in addition to not eating meat, you also don't do any dairy or eggs. And so I started asking him questions about that, and he started sending me videos and information. And I remember one of the first things he sent me was information about pigs being in confinement. And I had no idea that we kept pigs in crates, you know, for the duration of their lives. In some cases, you know, sows are sometimes kept as much as long as 6 years in crates where they can't even turn around. And so I questioned a friend of mine that was, had grown up on a farm. She didn't grow up on a pig farm, but I figured she would know stuff about this. And she said, oh, that's not true. And so then I thought, well, maybe this guy's lying to me. And so then I started researching it for myself. And sure enough, you know, we slaughter 100 million pigs every year, and many, you know, and they're often kept in these crates. And so then I started learning, you know, about some of the other animals. And chickens was really particularly horrific to me, because finding out that they often are boiled alive and that there is no protection for them. The Humane Slaughter Act does not cover birds, and so there are no federal laws at all, even one little law, to lessen their suffering.
Monica went on to tell me what the Humane Slaughter Act was and how ironic and misleading it is concerning animal rights.
So actually with the Humane Slaughter Act, it's like most laws that Congress passes, it's, the name is pretty misleading, and there's usually the opposite of what is actually going on in the bill. But the intention of it, it doesn't govern how animals are treated on a farm whatsoever. It doesn't govern transport to the slaughter facility. But in terms of mammals, again, all poultry are excluded. In terms of mammals, it's basically saying that they're supposed to be rendered insensible to pain prior to actually having their throat slit, which translates to, well, now they're going to be shocked, with a painful electric shock that's supposed to render them insensible to pain. Often the voltage is too low and it only paralyzes them, then they can still feel as their throat is slit. Or with cattle, there's a bolt gun to the head, and all this is done by unskilled workers. The turnover rate in slaughterhouses is probably the highest of any industry. It's a horrible place. Nobody wants to make a living by killing. Often it doesn't, even if it would work out as it should, that they're insensible prior to having their throat cut, it doesn't mean that it's humane. Mm-hmm. To anybody that thinks it is, I'd say, well, you go ahead and try that bolt gun to your head and tell me how humane it feels to you. So, but the other part of that is there's little to no enforcement. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's undercover video of USDA inspectors actually, telling the slaughterhouse workers, hey, that calf is, this baby dairy calf that's a unwanted byproduct of the dairy industry that they're killing at a few days old, saying, hey, that calf is still kicking, you better wait, because if it was a different inspector, as you're cutting its legs off or cutting its throat, you might get in trouble. So, the industry is basically set up to watchdog, be its own watchdog, and it doesn't happen. The enforcement isn't there. There's lots of testimony about how the animals die piece by piece as parts of them are being cut off along the slaughterhouse. Many are not dead, when they get to different stations where they should have been dead long ago. And the same with pigs and chickens. They often end up boiled to death. They're scalded to death in hot water tanks designed to soften their skin or to get rid of their feathers, because they weren't properly stunned and they weren't properly killed earlier down the line. And I can't think of a more gruesome way than to die than by being hung upside down by my legs and dunked in a tub of scalding hot water with no way to escape. And it happens. I mean, the industry has a term for it. It happens to millions of birds every year. So just the idea that, yes, we have a Humane Slaughter Act, doesn't cover 90% of the animals who are killed, the chickens and turkeys and ducks and geese, but also it's not enforced for the remaining animals. I think what people really need to know, any time that we're using animals for any purpose, profiting from them, you're almost guaranteed that there is abuse and neglect and, if not outright beating and violence, there's some type of abuse and neglect going on. For me, one of the last things that I kind of saw the light on was zoos. I loved animals. I loved going to zoos. I loved seeing animals. But of course, I never looked at it from their perspective. And this is true of, pretty much all animals in entertainment, that we might think of it as a few hours of fun for us, but it's a lifetime of misery for those animals who are enslaved. Some are stolen from the wild. The abuse is much more clear-cut in some cases than in others. I mean, the circus and the rodeo, definitely there's just violence going on, especially the circus. You're not getting these elephants to perform ridiculous tricks that they would never do in nature by giving them treats of peanuts or anything. I mean, they're using bull hooks, which is an instrument that looks like a fire poker, to beat these animals into submission. And same with tigers. I mean, they're being, and this is true of primates that are used in movies and other types of so-called entertainment. It's abuse and fear and violence that's making these animals do what we're wanting them to do. They're not performers. They're not there of their own free will.
This past week, Pava demonstrated in front of the Civic Center, since the Ringling Brothers Circus was in town. The tricks that animals have to do in circuses, like elephants resting their legs on top of each other in a circle, is not natural. Elephants know nothing of such things. Only circus trainers teach them these tricks. And by teaching, they abuse them verbally and physically with bull hooks, which are long sticks with a hook on the end. And elephants are usually captured when they're young. In doing this, the mother is usually killed, since she'll protect her baby to the death. If other animals are not captured, they're usually resold by flagship institutions, like Ringling Brothers, to unlicensed third parties that involve research labs, private collections, and exotic meat slaughtering facilities. In some cases with tigers, even their internal organs. This is so zoos and circuses can deny involvement in such abusive business that they're in when the animal is no longer wanted because it has become too aggressive from all the abuse he or she has endured. So, I went down there to the Civic Center and spoke to some of the protesters. I first spoke to Doris Mueller on how she felt about the circus. So, what are the rules that have been usually laid out to the protesters here against the circus when security comes out?
Well, we're a very peaceful group. We do abide by the law, but we have our constitutional right to protest on public sidewalks. So as long as we're not in any violations of the law or local ordinances, we have the right to be here. They can come out and tell us whatever they want to tell us, but as long as we're not in any violation of anything, they don't have the right to make us leave.
Do kids seem more impressionable by what you're doing?
Kids are curious about what we're doing here, especially if we're in costume. And those that can read do read our signs. I'm sure they do have questions for their parents later. Hopefully, parents can direct their children in a compassionate manner instead of just going along with family fun or family entertainment or tradition or whatever they want to call it.
And then spoke to another protester named Christopher Lance, a young boy who even had his parents support him in this cause and were standing right next to him holding signs. I asked him what brought him down to the protest that evening.
We are here in front of the circus today to protest against the cruelty that occurs at the circuses to the elephants and the training to all the animals.
And I see your parents are here. They're pretty supportive.
Yes, they definitely are. My mom's also very interested in this sort of thing with me and very adamant against animal cruelty.
What are the cruelties that take place in the circus?
Well, the training is very hard on the animals. The transportation of the animals also is very difficult on them. The training involves such things as bull hooks and stuff like that. The circuses will claim not to use cruelty, but undercover research has found that there's many cases of cruelty.
And then I spoke to Taiwo, who told me why she supports Pava and was down there protesting the circus. So, why did you come down here today to protest the circus?
Why did I come down? I am all in favor of animals, and I don't see why we should exploit them for human greed in any way.
Did you get any reactions today from people going into the circus with the signs that you were holding?
Well, some people looked at it and they seemed pleased, but other people just seemed disgusted. I also talked to a couple of people in school today about this, and the main questions were, they're just animals, or that was their replies. And I said, how would you like your dog or cat being treated like that? And they didn't have any replies.
And as the last few people went to the Civic Center to watch the abused animals perform for them, I was able to talk to two other protesters, Heidi and Megan, who were not with Pava but PETA, and were also angry that the Civic Center was putting on another circus show this year.
Because I want to raise awareness of all the animal abuse that most people have no idea about, how bad that it really is behind the curtain and in garages. They're beaten, shocked, bullhooked to extremes, and they are broken mentally into a rage, and they drive them mad.
What was kind of the reception tonight from the crowds coming in? Did you get any feedback at all?
Well, I don't know if you just heard the
the woman driving by screaming, supporting animal abuse. And we're just being very low-key, not talking to anybody at all, really, just holding up the signs, blank faces, and just showing people, just showing, informing people what really occurs during the circus.
How do you feel when you see the children that were just going in tonight?
I feel sorry for them because they will realize what goes on later in life. As more and more people protest and more things go on the internet and stuff, they're going to find out. And I would feel badly later on if I were them, wouldn't you?
Yes, and I feel very sad that these people are even going in there not knowing, have any idea, because they make it look like it's such a great family outing. It's all enjoyable. Happy, enjoyable. Why they have bull hooks and they put fringe and sparkly things on the hook to hide the hook so people don't even know. They think they're just, you know, hitting them with a stick to get them to go along. Well, they have all these sparkly things over the hook so no one can see it. It's just, it's all in disguise. It's all behind closed doors. And no one even knows this. All these people, they can't know this, or how could they attend? A lot of little kids paid attention to those pictures.
You saw them smiling at first, and then they looked at the pictures and they stopped smiling.
Yeah.
We heard a couple of people, one person actually told the child the truth when she asked, what are they doing to the elephants? And the mother or woman who was holding her said, they're beating her, or beating the elephants, but they continue to walk on.
Seeking solace.
Listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. For a while now, downtown Peoria has had a new venue called Art Show. Gavra Lynn, who has spoken to Solidarity Journal, has put up a place where artists can go to display their art and for musicians to perform. This past weekend, I went down there and spoke to Derek Hart, a musician, about how he feels about Art Show.
Well, I've seen, I've been hanging around here enough to see people just say, oh, Art Show sign, and then they go in there and look around and they're like, you know, this is what we needed. This is what Peoria needed. Sometimes, in a barren wasteland, there's a spark that rekindles that creative fire, and so that's why I think Peoria needs this.
I also spoke with Mandy Combs with the band Coal Hollow on how she felt about Art Show.
Well, I think that it's certainly a different kind of space for Peoria. I mean, in my personal experience, seen anything like this, like a collaborative kind of Peoria collective of artists. As far as just art and sculpture is concerned. So it's a really cool gathering of artists, especially when they have music play. It's really nice to see people that paint and musicians kind of come together and have a space to just kind of share what they have to offer.
Then there's Chris Keller, who's been living down at Art Show this past month, making art and listening to music and selling it as well. I had a chance to sit down and talk with him about his art and Art Show. So I'm here today with Chris Keller down at Art Show at Jefferson and Fuller, just right across from the Civic Center. And he's been practically living here in the Art Show facility from 12 to 8 p.m. from Monday through Saturday for all of September, and it's been called Christember. And what's been kind of going on here is local musicians in the Illinois area have been performing every Friday and Saturday night, along with Chris doing some artwork, which I'm now looking at. The proceeds at the raffle goes towards TAPS. So what made you come up with this idea?
I guess I've always kind of had it, just an idea of like living in a space and just making art there for the whole month, or just kind of have a spot. And then August 5th, the opening for Wes Duffy and Keith Wilson. I told my friend Eddie, who has some pieces here, Eddie F and Art Machine, and he thought it was a good idea. I thought it was more conceptual based and not really good for reality. But then he's like, no, you should really ask Evra, because they didn't have a featured artist for September. So I told him if I got enough courage, liquid or otherwise, that I'd do it. And luckily I completed a really sweet drawing. I listened to a bunch of good records here that night, and then I had two ice houses that also pushed me over the edge to get the gumption up to ask. And then she was receptive to the idea, and then August 8th we got it finalized that, you know, this is what we're gonna do. And then I just started booking bands and getting different artists to come down different nights to paint with me for the live art raffle, and it's been kind of a blur.
Have you done anything quite like this before?
This is my first ever kind of public showing, outside of having a few pieces here. When Eddie put his stuff up, he took some stuff that I gave him a couple years ago to put up, but outside of that, this is my first like solo show.
What makes this different from the other galleries?
Well, I mean, this is I think the only gallery around where you can bring in pieces, and if Gavra likes them, she'll put them up like either right then or, you know, for the next week. And you know, you don't have to submit slides. There's no laborious procedures to go through. It's pretty much you bring stuff in, and if she likes it, or I mean, it's not so much about liking, it's about like knowing, seeing that it's like a someone's true expression, and then giving that expression a chance to sit and be heard by others or seen by others.
What do you think is going to be one of the most difficult things for art show to do, being that it's in Peoria?
Outside of the CAC and the Art Guild, there's not a lot of... Well, I wouldn't say that... I mean, there's other galleries and other studios. So, I mean, it's just kind of smaller. It's just like the Peoria Chiefs here. You know, they're not... This isn't Chief Country, you know. It's people are still mostly Cubs and Cardinals fans. It's just like anything, like in Peoria, where there's a lot of people who are passionate about it, and that's what keeps it going, just like every subculture here.
So, like, what type of value does this art have to you?
I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, I think this space is, like, more important than anything on its walls or any of the bands that play, like, the fact that this space can stay open, and like, to me, that's the most important thing, because that's kind of like a vehicle that everyone can get in, you know. It's like, now that the circus is in town, you could look at his art show as like a clown car, and we can fit as many people in the car as we want, and then they can all come out and put up stuff on the walls and start playing music. And yeah, this, I don't know, I think after this month we've built ties with over 30 different musicians, some who've already played here before, but the majority of them had never even heard of this place before, and now they know it's a space where if they want to book an interesting show and do something different, like, there's that space available. Because at a lot of the different bars, you can kind of get experimental, but I mean, at a certain point, there are still people just drinking beer, wanting to watch games with the sound off.
I asked Chris if he has any political elements in his art.
Yeah, but yeah, most of my political ideas are, I try to make them subtle as to not alienate people who would be more prone to or less prone to hearing that, you know, rather than cut off the communication right away. It's better to, like, keep talking and then figure out, or let the work speak for itself, then perhaps, like, your ideas can be transmitted subliminally to, you know, to the viewer who may not share your same political viewpoints.
I had heard that Chris had once been arrested while in college in Iowa to something related with art. I asked him what this was about.
It was my first year at school, and at the time my roommate had chipped me out of my utilities money, and we got the power shut off and the water, so I was kind of living up at the university, just, you know, showering up there and hanging out there at night because they had, like, light so I could read or get on the internet or do whatever. Everyone was talking how the painting room was kind of dead and nothing ever goes on in there, and, like, they were right. It was just kind of a ghost town at night, like, because I had to walk there on my way and nobody would be in there working or doing anything. And they had paint on the walls, like splatters here and there from when people either get too vigorous with their strokes or just splatter from whatever. So I didn't think it would be a big deal to paint on the walls. And it was getting towards the end of the school year, which they paint over them anyways. So I just decided I was going to do a big mural up on the wall. And it was about 4 hours into it and had some stuff marked out when the Daryl Taylor, the director of the UNI gallery, came in and asked me if I had any authority, if I was a student, and if I had authority to do this. I said I was a student, and I didn't ask permission from anybody. And then he said he was calling the police, and I kind of continued painting because I wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't sure what his whole deal was. But then he came back again, and this time with a smirk on his face, saying that, yes, he had indeed had called the police, but if I left right that moment, you know, he would kind of look the other way, even though he'd already called the police, which I didn't feel was, I don't know, either if you're gonna just try to make it where I can scram and not get arrested, like, how about just not call the police and tell me to scram? Or, you know, come back with some gesso and gesso over the walls if it's that big of a deal. But so then, you know, after he says that with the simpering tone, I continue painting a little bit, and then I started cleaning up my materials. But then it dawned on me that I didn't know it at that time that that was Daryl Taylor, the director of the UNI Art Gallery. I thought he may have been a teacher or something. So I went down into the gallery where he was, and I asked him if he was a teacher there, and he said no, that he wasn't. And I said, good. And he's like, well, why do you say that? I was like, well, if I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to have you as a teacher, and I just wanted to know what your name was, so I know not to take one of your classes. And then I went back upstairs and finished cleaning out my brushes and putting all my supplies away. And that's when the police officer walked in and asked me if I had painted this mural. And I said yes, and he told me it hands behind your back and did the whole spiel.
What do you want people like to walk away with besides your art? When they come in here and they see this and they walk out that door, what do you want them to remember?
I hope they enjoyed themselves. And just like when we have the music acts, the turnout has been pretty steady, but there's been no really like packed houses. But everyone who's came has, I think, enjoyed themselves immensely. And like, I don't know, that's pretty much, that's my only angle, is increase people's everyday enjoyment. If it's just coming in here and seeing all the art from all the different artists, and, you know, because a lot of people don't even know that this place exists, and then, you know, and it just becomes an oasis in the downtown desert.
Thanks for listening to Solidarity Journal. If you want to learn more about Peoria Area Voices for Animals, you can go to their website at www.animalrightspeoria.org. And as for Art Show, please check them out on Facebook or go to downtown Peoria, right across from the Civic Center on Jefferson, and check out the local art scene and music. And if you want to hear more progressive local exposés, tune in every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. to hear Solidarity Journal. Or go online to radio4all.net and search for Solidarity Journal to find all the archived episodes. So until next time, keep up the resistance.